There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me.
It's 88.9 FM, KUCI, in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of UCI, KUCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. We're easing into talking animals. We're in about 20 minutes' time. We'll have a veterinarian taking calls. Any questions about animal behavior, medical care, treatment, other stuff. So 949-824-5824 for that. Thinking of your questions. And Dr. Mary Sebsa will join us with it then. Meanwhile, Kid Creole and the Coconuts with Stool Pigeon, KUCI.
Yeah.
That's music from Kid Creole and the Coconuts with a song called Stool Pigeon as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you, for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show, especially getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. Our guest today will be Dr. Mary Sebsta, an excellent veterinarian locally here, and she's going to talk about a few things, but she's going to be happy to take your calls with any questions about care of your animals, medical difficulties, behavioral things, other things that you might want to ask a vet for free. So that's coming up a little bit later here on Talking Animals, but you might want to be thinking of your questions and then join us by calling in again, 949-824-5824. Other ways, of course, to be in touch with us include emailing us at talkinganimals@aol.com and checking out our wonderful website at talkinganimals.net. That's right. That's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another stirring session of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been about 7 months or so since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, including Dr. Sophia Yin, a veterinarian who's done pioneering research on dog barks and what they mean, Ian Anderson, the singer-songwriter, flute player behind rock band Jethro Tull, something of an animal advocate and expert, Dan Matthews, who is vice president of communications at PETA, is the chief strategist of the organization's high-profile campaigns. We also had a freewheeling chat with Meryl Marco, the Emmy-winning television writer, author, and creator of Stupid Petrix on the Letterman Show nearly 25 years ago. So not only are all those interviews archived within the shows that are archived on our nifty website at, again, www.talkinganimals.net, but our string of exceptional guests continues today, as I mentioned before, when we speak with Dr. Mary Sebsta, really excellent veterinarian who practices at the Newport Harbor Animal Hospital here locally. And in fact, she's our first return guest on Talking Animals, having joined us in June for a recorded interview at that point about the Consumer Reports article that had just been published then about veterinarian practices and pricing. And she also spoke to us about selecting a vet, getting a second opinion, and other subjects. Today, though, as I mentioned, she's going to join us live to discuss pet obesity and some other topics and to take calls from you that you might have any specific questions about veterinary treatment, behavior issues, the care and feeding of the animals that live with you, any other animal-related question, really, that you'd like to ask her. And did I mention that's free? She won't be charging for this. So so you may want to be thinking about some questions to ask Dr. Sebsta when she joins us just a little bit later in the program. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show, because, again, you may want to make some comments on these items or ask some questions, follow up, whatever. And again, if there's other news items that you might have come across that we should be aware of, you can call those in or of course, email them to talkanimals@aol.com. But the number here, again, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight and, with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, all right, then. And that said, let's talk turkey, as it were. First, going to start off once again talking about Tiger Rescue. Again, that's the facility in Colton, California, and been in the news off and on for several months now, really. And the short version of the story is that it was a so-called sanctuary for tigers and other big cats. I guess previously had been in TV and film and other stuff. And anyway, the facility, as it turns out, had really been long neglected, and so more to the point, I guess, the animals had been long neglected. So the proprietor now is facing serious criminal charges, but many of those animals, most in fact, are still there. Some have been relocated to other legitimate sanctuaries, but many are still awaiting their new homes, which I'll come back to in a moment on that. But so in the meantime, there's an amazing man named Chuck Tracy, who otherwise runs a cool facility of his own down in Ramona, California, by San Diego, called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. So he stepped up in every sense of that phrase to handle the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue, because there are still animals there that need, you know, care and feeding and you know, nursing back from some fairly poor treatment previously. So he's doing that all by way of a huge, ongoing, rotating battalion of volunteers who go out and help clean the enclosures, water down the cages and holes and stuff, and then, you know, in the afternoon, feed the tigers and other big cats, and do anything else to help kind of fix up their enclosures, make their life more comfortable. And it's really a cool, amazing experience. I've done it. I wish I'd done it more. I've done it a couple times, and I've sent other people out there who come back just sort of raving about what a really profound, cool experience it was. So that's all by way of saying that if you think you could carve out a part of a day, on a weekend, a weekday, so much the better. But at any point, email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We will hook you up, and really you'll have quite an amazing experience really helping out these animals. On a related note, though, there is places for these tigers and other big cats to go in terms of space, but what isn't quite set yet is enclosures for them to live. So part of the next step in that process is raising funds to build enclosures that could house these tigers when they do get up to this facility that has agreed to take them. It's a really great facility. I've been to it. It's up in Northern California. It's one of the facilities run by an organization called PAWS. And anyway, so if you could find a way to donate a couple of bucks, maybe more than a couple, to the campaign to get these enclosures built, then all the more these tigers can be moved and have a much better and happier life. So maybe you write a check, mark it Save the Tigers, and send it to the Fund for Animals. Attention, Save the Tigers, 200 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019. And along similar lines, we're still in the first month of the year, so I think this is still very pertinent. Another kind of fundraising option too is to get a really amazing calendar that features pictures primarily of the tigers and other big cats from Tiger Rescue. There's still some other animals too from that Wildlife Rehabilitation Center I referred to a moment ago, but it's $10. Really gorgeous pictures, really a great calendar. And again, all those monies go to 100% go to help the animals there. So if you want to go that route, $10 takes away the calendar, handles the postage and everything else, and send that to Cindy Tracy, not coincidentally, wife of Chuck Tracy. That's T-R-A-I-S-I, and that goes to the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center, 18740 Highland Valley Road, Ramona, California, 92065. If you want to double-check either of those addresses, call us at 949-824-5824 or email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. On a somewhat lighter note, maybe considerably so, last week, since we were last together here on Talking Animals, there was a fairly interesting development at the Los Angeles Zoo. I'm just going to read a little bit of the coverage from the LA Times story. Her admirers call her Amazing Gracie, and this week the 16-year-old chimpanzee proved just how amazing she is by escaping from her enclosure at the Los Angeles Zoo for the fourth time. Gracie's leap to freedom Monday afternoon set a single animal zoo record, and the incident caused the kind of buzz the zoo dreads. Television helicopters hung noisily in the sky, threatening to spook the hoofstock, which was penned up as roughly 4,000 zoo visitors were evacuated. CNN carried the story, and city council members swapped tales about Amazing Gracie at their Wednesday meeting. By escaping, Gracie had done what the zoo had promised the U.S. Department of Agriculture last summer it would prevent. The department enforces the Federal Animal Welfare Act, and after more than 35 animal escapes in recent years, the zoo had agreed to improve its record, and escapes were down. Then came Gracie, and the story goes on. So, you gotta admire her spunk and ingenuity, do you not? That's right. So, any thoughts on that? 949-824-5824. You might recall, if you're a long-time or semi-long-time listener of Talking Animals, back in August, our guest was Tawny Lee Thompson, on August 11th, in fact, who teaches, vet tech, who teaches pet CPR and first aid. So we learned all about that and what goes on in the classes. So there's a new few of those coming up that I wanted to alert you to in case you wanted to enroll in one yourself. They're on Sundays, and it's just a one-day class for like 5 hours, noon to five. So there's one coming up on February 15th in Seal Beach, and then subsequently two in Huntington Beach on February 29th, and then again on March 21st. So class covers how to approach and handle injured pets, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, controlling bleeding, treatment of shock, how to manage more common emergencies like choking, snake bites, fractured limbs, poisoning, etc. And you get a book, and you're certified, and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, that, and there again, from noon to five on those specific Sundays. For more information, call Trina at 949-586-4250. And gonna jump right into our quiz, our instant short quiz. One question, true or false? First person that knows the answer and calls in gets a prize. Yes, that's right. We're big on prizes here at Talking Animals. So, here it is. Goldfish lose their color if they are kept in a dim light or if they are placed in a body of running water. True or false? 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. I guess we'll hit maybe one more story and then maybe come back to some others later in the show if we have time, because we do want to get Dr. Sebs on the line with us momentarily. But I was fairly alarmed when I came across this morning. A group composed of retail veterans from Gap and IKEA have started what they call quote-unquote lifestyle stores selling puppies in Boston. The new venture, known as Woof & Company, plans to compete with private breeders selling purebred puppies and upscale accessories in what they describe as a distinct niche in the United States, quote, pet industry. Linda Povey, a partner in the consultancy that created the company, says of other chains like PetSmart and Petco, "We're not interested in going head-to-head selling dog food. Their strategy is high volume, low prices. We're a lifestyle store." However, neither PetSmart nor Petco sell puppies. Instead, both stores provide pet adoption days for local animal welfare groups. The two stores that the new company has opened in Boston area malls, as well as other stores they plan to add over the next years, will feature puppies from Hunt Corporation, a Missouri puppy broker. So it goes on from there, but that seems kind of disturbing. More than a little disturbing, frankly. So, anyways, like I say, we'll come back to some other things, time permitting, later in the show. But want to see if we can get Dr. Sebs to join us on the line. And in the meantime, of course, we're going to step into the comedy corner. And this is, as always, animal-oriented piece of comedy. And it's a vintage piece, actually, from Bob Newport. It's called On Poodles and Planes. It's the Comedy Corner on Talking Animals here on KUCI.
We have two poodles, two little poodles named Willard and Wilbur. They're toy poodles, and they came out of the same litter. There were two of them. And I have nothing against poodles. They're very nice, as a matter of fact, or dogs. I'm not advising you not to get dogs, but don't get two dogs. I'll tell you the problem. The problem is, if you go out, and then when you come back, you will find a message for you from one of them, usually on the carpet or something like that. And the problem is with two poodles, you don't know which one did it, you see? It's a case of the phantom strikes again. And you can't punish both of them, because the one who went on the paper figures, well, they don't want it there, so... I'll do it on the couch next time. I don't know. But we had them up in Vegas. I was just up in Las Vegas. And we flew up. And I don't dig flying a great deal. I take what's known as a white knuckle flight in the airline business. I'm not even too wild about the ramp that, you know, I have to get drunk to get on the ramp to get into the plane. I didn't used to mind flying when they had the props going, because when I fly, I like a lot of noise going on the wings, when, you know. But when you're on the jets now, they just have the pods out there, and you're sitting there, and you're looking out, and they're going, and you're saying, they're probably on. No, I'm sure. No, I know they're on. I know they're on. Oh, yeah. And then before you take off, this has nothing to do with it. It doesn't prove anything. It hasn't got to do with maintenance or anything, but they have a checklist they go through. This is just for the passengers. It makes them feel better. The pilot or the stewardess, whoever happens to be flying the particular flight you're on, comes out and kicks the tires. Now this...
All right, that's Bob Newhart with the first portion of a piece called On Poodles and Planes, taken from his CD Something Like This. Comedy Corner is a signature feature of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM and streaming live, as you know, on the internet at www.kuci.org. And speaking of websites, I am pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out. It's at www.talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net. And when you get there, please join the mailing list, the email list, so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by, take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. And before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. And now it's time to welcome our guest, Dr. Mary Sebsta. As I mentioned earlier, she's an excellent veterinarian who practices at the Newport Harbor Animal Hospital, and was the first a guest, in fact, on Talking Animals back in June. And at that point, she was talking to us about the Consumer Reports article that had just been published about veterinarians and other practices and other subjects. And today, though, she joined us live to discuss pet obesity and other topics, and she's been nice enough to agree to take calls from Talking Animals listeners who may have specific questions about their pet's veterinary treatment or behavior issues, care and feeding, anything else. So let's welcome back to the program Dr. Mary Sebsta. Dr. Sebster, are you there?
Hi, yeah. How are you, Duncan?
Great. Welcome back to Talking Animals. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And let's start off again. Let's encourage anyone listening who might have questions for you to call 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. But let's also, because I have a personal interest in this based on one of our animals at home, let's talk a little bit about pet obesity. First of all, what constitutes pet obesity? And then let's go from there.
Oh, good question. Well, pet obesity, as it would be implied in humans as well, too, is just a pet being overweight for their breed and their body type. And this is near and dear to my heart, too.
Oh, yeah?
Because I definitely have an overweight cat myself.
Oh, well, frankly, that's comforting to hear. Because, you know, when I look at our Curtis, who's just a great cat, but, I mean, she's really heavy, and I'm thinking, okay, are we doing something wrong, or what's... So that was part of why I'm interested. Like, are there just various causes beyond... I mean, it can't merely be eating, or is it?
Well, I think to a large part, the majority of pets that I see are overweight, it is a factor of calorie intake versus the amount of calorie output that they get through exercise.
Okay.
But there certainly are cases, medical cases of obesity, too, that need to be investigated. But, yeah, obesity probably represents about the number three reason I see animals, or the number third most likely problem that I'll point out to owners about their pet in an examination room. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be something that a lot of owners notice in their pets. So although it's a problem that I'll pick up in many pets on a physical exam, the owners probably haven't even been aware that their pet is overweight.
Well, is there a certain guideline that where's the line between a cat or a dog, whatever, that's you know, a bit heavy when it crosses over into actually being obesity?
Yeah. There are two general ways I point out to owners that they can look into whether they think their pet is overweight or not. There certainly are many charts and graphs out there, circulating out there, for instance, in dogs, for how much the average male or female dog of a particular breed should weigh. Obviously, we don't have the same weight range for a Chihuahua that we're going to have for a Great Dane.
Sure. Right.
So there's, in dogs at least, it's complicated by the fact that even though they're all dogs, from breed to breed, there is a considerable size difference in these animals.
Right.
Cats are a little different, and although there are some breeds, such as the Maine Coon, that typically tend to be a larger cat, most cats, on average, should weigh somewhere between an 8 and 11-pound range.
Wow.
So they're a little simpler. And in the case of mine, who's just a domestic short hair, he should weigh, at most, I would say, 10 to 11 pounds. And he's actually more like a 15-pound cat.
And so, okay, so you're, a vet, an expert, whatever. So with your cat there, I mean, what can be done?
He's frowning because he knows I'm talking.
I'm sure, yeah. Well, this is not a friendly conversation, really. Because I would assume if you could get him to exercise more, for example,
he would.
But
I have to admit, in our case, I think it's entirely related to his activity level because I'm gone for so much of the day.
Sure.
And he isn't very motivated to get on a treadmill or, run up and down the stairs for me during
right.
the day. It's really difficult to encourage play in him
mm-hmm.
and to get him, to play with little wands or strings or, something of interest. So I think the reason we've had a hard time getting weight off of him is just due to the fact that there's not a whole lot of activity encouraged in him.
Sure.
And I try as much as I can to remind myself, either get a timer or something to just devote 15 minutes or a day to him to get him running around and playing.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting then, just because this is very similar to our situation, so obviously there's another cat at your house
mm-hmm.
that is not overweight.
No, she's not. I have a younger female. She's about 3 years older, or excuse me, 3 years younger
okay.
than he is, and she's not overweight at all. Of interest, I should point out that both of my cats are spayed and neutered.
Right, of course.
So actually spaying and neutering had nothing to do with weight gain in the older male's case. The spayed female certainly is a normal, healthy weight.
Yeah.
And she's had no problems. She is a much more active cat in the household.
I see. So so it's just almost like a personality difference that would account
yeah.
for why there's two cats in your yeah. home and one's heavy and one's not.
Yeah, and yeah. far less food motivated too, I must admit.
Okay.
She'll eat to a certain point and then decide I've had enough and kind of walk away from the bowl and not worry about food.
I see.
For long periods of time. If I left a bowl of food out on the floor and kept it full all day, I'm sure he would just continue eating all day.
And what do you think, with that in mind, of some of these kind of weight reduction foods, IMs, I'm sure others, but
uh-huh.
that's what we've been trying, with limited success. But, how much difference can that make, or is that really not, again, the root cause necessarily, so it's going to have limited effectiveness?
I think they definitely have their place in weight management, and
mm-hmm.
I encourage owners with obese pets to still consider using them because I think they definitely have their place. The first place I start with in an examination of an obese pet and just the interview with the owner is first trying to identify what the healthy weight of their pet should be and how much overweight they are to give them an idea of where we're going with this and how much of a medical problem this is for their cat already.
Okay.
So Horace being 4 pounds overweight, that's almost 40% of his body weight that he's overweight by.
Yeah.
That's important. He actually was heavier still at one point. He was 17 at one point before we started weight reduction diets.
Oh, wow.
And so they can help, but they're not, the be-all and end-all
mm-hmm.
of weight management for
yeah.
pets. But they do help considerably, especially in animals where you're going to be limited on changing their exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are many companies, Iams and Hills and various others that will make weight reduction plans. I think you need to have a serious discussion with your veterinarian about which of these diets you might like to start. And most importantly, have an idea of how much the animal is supposed to be fed on a daily basis. Because what we don't want to do is have the owner take home a specific weight control diet and then just, you know, like I said, do the ad lib sort of feeding where the bowl is full for the entire day. It's kind of like the same argument of the overweight lady who eats calorie-reduced ice cream but eats it by the bucket full.
Yeah. Well, I think that also may touch on something else that we need to be doing at our house, because I think that there's too much exposure, I think, to even weight reduced food there. But and I think I think we talked about this actually last time, but I think it's kind of probably helpful to address what I guess turns out to be a wives' tale. But I know I keep hearing, and sometimes people are even trying to make excuse for our cat, that a fixed female, if it's fixed before her first litter, that there's some correlation between maybe being a heavier, if not obese, cat.
And absolutely not.
Right.
What I read in the research, absolutely not at all. In fact, I do even still see the reverse in breeding, intact male and females. I see obese animals in that genre as well, too. So I'm convinced that, you know, while I've been in practice, that it's nothing related to spaying and neutering.
Yeah.
It's definitely related to how much food they're eating as opposed to how much activity they're getting. And I think in the instance of spaying and neutering, the only change that may happen there that maybe owners aren't aware of is that the intact male or female cat, particularly if they were an outdoor animal, may have been more active because they were roaming and searching for mates. And when you take that interest away from them, that perhaps their activity level did change, which means that perhaps they should be fed less food. Also on that note, too, pregnant and lactating animals do require a higher amount of energy to provide nutritional support for their offspring. So certainly a pregnant and lactating female is going to be eating a whole lot more. When she's spayed, she's going to need a whole lot less.
I just want to remind our listeners that, again, if you have questions for Dr. Sebs, that's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And Dr. Sebs, along these same lines, I mean, what, because it sounds like, you know, just even at your own home, there's the, you know, it's almost personality difference. What would you do to try to encourage a cat that is heavy to exercise more if maybe their personality or disposition is such that they're not inclined to? How do you encourage that, really?
I think all owners have a pretty good idea of what types of play that their animals like.
Mm-hmm.
They know whether their cat likes to play with toys by themselves or whether, you know, there has to be some sort of active play from the owner involved, too, whether they like trees to climb on or whether they like robotic toys. And just kind of figuring out which toys the cat likes best and having an overabundance of them. And like I said, another thing that I try to encourage is use of a timer at home, some method where you can devote 10 to 15 minutes of yourself trying to, you know, institute play with your animal.
Oh, wow.
To just get them moving around and just remember to do it. That's the hard part, however, remembering to do it.
Sure, or finding the time. Like you say, if people are gone a lot of the day, it's probably hard to...
most people have a hard enough time getting to the gym themselves.
Right, yeah, much less working the cat gym visit in, yeah. But
no, we all wish there were a 24-hour fitness for cats.
For sure, that'd be great. All right, well, let's maybe move on to another topic. You know, there may not be just a simple answer to this, but what kind of tips would you give for people who are struggling to give their animal a pill?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think when clients come in and they watch me give pills to cats and dogs, they think, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Dr. Sebs, do you mind holding one sec? We may have a caller here. Hold on one sec. Hi, you're on the air on KUCI Talking Animals.
Hi there. I just heard you mention giving a cat a pill.
Oh, yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. And I'm struggling with that right now because the pill is kind of large. It's for a stomach problem.
Oh, dear.
And the vet put it in a clear capsule
okay.
to make it, like, easier to take, but it's still too big for our cat, and she freaks out every time we try to approach her with a pill.
Oh, dear. Do you know what the medication is?
I can tell you in one sec, but we've tried rolling it in liverwurst or in a turkey slice, anything to mask the taste, but nothing's worked so far. It's called, let's see, antibiotic, hold on. Metronidazole? Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Metronidazole is a very bitter tablet, and especially when it's broken into small segments, like a quarter or a half a tablet, as most cats will receive, it can be very, very bitter tasting. If cats bite into it, they'll foam at the mouth, and they just hate it. The gel capsules that most veterinary hospitals, supply broken up tablets of metronidazole in, are aimed at disguising that pill so that it's easier to give it to the cat so that they can't immediately taste the pill once it gets in their mouth. But I do appreciate that in the capsule some owners can feel maybe it's larger or more cumbersome. What I do with cats or dogs, if I'm just giving a regular pill in the hospital, is I kind of back their little bodies up into me so I limit their ability to escape. Essentially.
Okay.
So I will be holding the cat with its back or its rear end towards my chest and just kind of cuddle them in my arms. And the next thing I'll do is I'll tilt their head up in one of my hands with their nose kind of facing towards the ceiling. And then on the outside of their mouths, with my thumb and my middle finger, kind of pinch the corners of their mouth to open it.
Uh-huh.
I'll use my second hand, the middle finger, just to kind of gently lower their bottom jaw.
Okay.
And then try and drop the pill. Or gel capsule in this case, to the back of the cat's mouth and as much towards the midline, the center as possible, and then just give it a quick push. That's how I medicate animals in the hospital. Now, owners, especially if they've never given pills before, that can be really difficult. And I do encourage, by all means, that if you're having a lot of difficulty, perhaps bringing your cat back to the veterinarian and having a technician or a veterinarian demonstrate how to do that.
Okay.
But sort of quick things that you can do at home, if your cat has a treat that they particularly like and it's soft, like a soft cheese, liverwurst, as you mentioned before, some cats like butter or other sorts of things like that, sometimes you can put a little bit of that product around the outside of the gel capsule just to kind of make it seem like it's tasty. But on average, I find in lots of cats and in dogs, you can't expect them to just kind of eat it off of a plate because they don't like the texture, they don't like the way it feels in their mouth. And again, if they bite into it, they're going to bite into something that's really, really bitter. In the events where pilling is just not possible at all in some cats, and I appreciate that there are cats out there, and I've examined them in my room, and I just know that the owner is going to have an impossible time trying to give the pills. There are pharmacies that can compound certain products into liquids.
Oh, okay.
Metronidazole would not be one that can be made into an oral liquid, unfortunately, because it is so bitter. Cats still won't take it well.
Right.
Some products can actually be transformed by a compounding pharmacy into a transdermal cream, which is something that you just wipe on the inside of the cat's ear, and it gets absorbed through the skin.
Oh, wow.
You have to check, or your veterinarian would have to check with a compounding pharmacist to see if that particular product can be made into a cream. But in the instance where I have some cats that are, you know, just so stressed out and so angry about pilling, for instance, hyperthyroid kitties, there are a few that I've prescribed a transdermal cream for their medication, and it's worked pretty well for them.
Well, this is great. I'm going to try the backing them up, backing her up and putting the pill in. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. I hope that works well.
Really like your show, Duncan.
Thanks for calling Talking Animals.
Bye.
Okay, and I think we have another caller holding. Let's see if we can get her on the air. Hello, you there?
Yes,
hello. You're on live on Talking Animals with Dr. Sebsta.
Thank you for taking my call. Just an unrelated topic, I think, but my two-year-old Yorkie developed what the veterinarian called a hot spot on his lower belly.
Okay.
I'd been away for a few weeks and left him with a very competent pet sitter, but I guess the fact that I wasn't here really caused some anxiety, but I don't know anything about that. Could you tell me a little about the problem?
From anxiety, some cats and dogs can lick obsessively at their skin. It's kind of a method of redirecting aggression or anxiety. And through constant licking of the skin, some abrasions. abrasion will happen to the skin, and then an infection will set in later, and it leaves this sort of nice round area of really moist, ooey-gooey skin.
Right.
That would be a behavioral reason for a hot spot forming. There, of course, are other reasons why hot spots can form, including various types of skin disease, allergy, flea bites, external parasites, and things of that nature, too. So any hot spot forming in the skin really should be evaluated by a veterinarian specifically for skin disease to make sure that there's not a medical problem that's happening there that needs to be treated. Ones that are related to behavioral or anxiety issues, I do recommend use of pet sitters in those cases, as I do find that when owners go away on vacation, sometimes a pet sitter in their home is less stressful than a dog in boarding.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, I'm not too sure what else can be done here. It, you know, if it is definitely related to a behavioral type problem, that may necessitate talking to an animal behaviorist about that to try and find the cues that are causing that.
Can I ask the caller, has since you obviously, I guess, returned, have those hot spots cleared up, or is there still...
Yes, it was only one, and it was treated with a topical spray, and it seemed to have done Vedco, I think it's called, Gentle Ved topical spray, and it certainly has cleared up.
Okay.
So that's helpful, right? But I'm very interested in what you had to say, because it may have started with a flea bite. That's quite possible.
Okay. Yeah, I see lots of hot spots throughout the year, and this is important to note, too, that I don't just get flea allergy problems in the summer. Even though fleas are most active and definitely reproducing at the highest numbers throughout the summer, I still do see cases of flea bite and flea-related allergies in dog skin even throughout the winter. So if fleas are definitely a problem, then they need to be controlled. Otherwise, the hot spots are going to come back.
Yeah, no, I understand. No, that's very interesting. That's really helpful. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
It's over.
Hello.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I thought we were getting another caller, but it was someone calling about the previous show. My mistake. Sorry. All right. Well, we're sort of just nearing the end of our time here, Dr. Sevsta. But I have one other sort of question that, again, kind of from recent personal experience. So we basically just have cats at home. Mm-hmm. But we had a really nice dog that was visiting for a few days, and we kept them, you know, pretty much separate because one of the cats in particular territorial and nutty and whatever. But the one that's actually less territorial and really kind of friendly disposition, we think coincidentally or not, and that's I guess my question, developed diarrhea.
Okay.
And we had her checked out, and there doesn't seem to be any clinical, medical reason or anything at least significant that they were able to find.
Okay.
Is that something that would come from the stress, even though she didn't seem to be particularly freaked out that there was a dog there? And again, they weren't really face-to-face, but she actually seemed curious about the dog. We had like little baby gates and stuff kind of separating them. But is that something that would possibly cause that kind of reaction?
Yeah, sure. Stress... you know, from a new pet entering or exiting the house certainly can cause problems, and we can see dietary upset, which may result in diarrhea. Sometimes their feeding patterns and their patterns of drinking water, too, temporarily can be off because of the new person or the new animal in the household as well, too. As you mentioned, you know, you've already taken this kitty cat to a veterinarian, which is a very good idea because lots of cases of diarrhea do have a medical basis.
Sure.
We always want to be sure that we're not missing something like parasites that got transmitted from the new dog to the
cat. Right.
Especially with a baby in the household, too, because a good number of parasites, for instance, roundworms and hookworms, are not only transmissible in between dogs and cats, but also to people.
Sure.
As well, too. So that's a little bit of a concern. But if there's no medical reason for the diarrhea, then I would say that it most likely is related to stress. And, you know,
and then by the same token, would it be reasonable to assume or at least hope that as in the ensuing days after the dog has you know, kind of left the house for the visit, then would the diarrhea subside kind of on its own in that same way because that stress, that new element has been removed?
It should.
Yeah.
You know, it certainly should. But I would think that it should resolve within a time period of about 2 to 3 days, essentially, after
okay.
the dog leaving.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's amazing how the entrance of a new animal or even a new person into a household can just change the entire social hierarchy of the pets that are already there.
Sure.
It does cause some problems at times.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Sebsta, this has been so great. We're just pretty much at the end of our time now, but really appreciate you joining us on Talking Animals. And I want to remind people that that you practice at the Newport Harbor Animal Hospital and that the website there, if people want to check out about the hospital, and there's a little, I think, kind of bio on each veterinarian, including yourself. It's www.newportharborvets.com. And Dr. Sebsta, we really appreciate your time and your expertise, and it was great to have people call in and get some questions answered, and we'll hope you'll join us again sometime on Talking Animals.
Sure will. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Sebsta.
All right.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, again, I want to thank Dr. Sebsta, and as I say, Newport Harbor Animal Hospital is where you can find her, and they do have a really nice website, www.newportharborvets.com. So, we are going to ease into, as we are already, a bit of an animal song of sorts. It's this is Jimmy Smith with Ape Man. KUCI. That's Jimmy Smith, Ape Woman. Sometimes it's nice to do an instrumental animal tune, is it not? All right. And speaking of tunes, it's time now for Name That Animal Tune. And, of course, as you probably know, it's remarkably like any other version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this case, the tunes are always animal-related, so usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. Either way, like most renditions of this game, it can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while, of course, the game hinges on a song being somewhat recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, but also noting there's always a prize. Did he say prize? I think he did. Yes, I did. for the first caller who correctly identifies the song and artist. So soon as you recognize this animal tune, please phone us, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right, let's get started. See if we can name that animal tune on Talking Animals on KUCI. Anyone? Anyone name that animal tune? Getting pretty easy if we get to the... All right, we just gave you the answer right there. All right, so if you know it, call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. All right, well... Maybe we'll tell you what it is. Who knows? Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we do. At any rate, I'm Duncan Strauss, and we've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Dr. Mary Sebsta, for joining us today on Talking Animals from Newport Harbor Animal Hospital. I also want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll join us next Monday on Talking Animals when... and get our technological issues squared away. Our guest will be comedian, actress, activist Janine Garofalo. We'll have all kinds of interesting to say about animals and activism and the pros and perils of such and other things as well, and maybe some non-animal related things, including presidential candidates and who knows. So really interesting, smart stuff, no doubt, from Janine next week. So join us if you can for that next Monday, February 2nd on Talking Animals. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, the wonderful syndicated feature, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this virtually each weekday here on KUCI, usually 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, and then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m., so when you have a chance, please check it out. And later this week, I'll be filling in for The Groove Gallery, this Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Hope you'll join me then. I also hope you'll check out our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. And as always, we're going to close things out with an animal-related tune. This is Kula Shaker with a song called Smart Dots. Again, we urge you to catch the Blues Disease coming up momentarily. This is 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.